This is Fresh Air. Writer William Volman turned 33 this year. He also had 3 books published by 3 major publishers, and he's never had a literary agent. Volman researched Whores for Gloria by hanging out in San Francisco's Tenderloin District, where he could satisfy his obsession with prostitutes. He also gathered material on the resident psychopaths, deviants, alcoholics, and skinheads for an earlier book, The Rainbow Stories. In 1990, Volman embarked on an ambitious project he calls The Seven Dreams Cycle. It's a series of 7 books that will tell a symbolic history of North America, beginning with the invasion of the Vikings in 1000 AD. The second volume, Fathers and Crows, has just been published. It's set in 17th century Canada, and it's about the competition between the French Jesuits, Indians, and fur trappers. Though the books are fiction, Volman does exhaustive research. He's taken several trips to the Arctic and the magnetic North Pole to try to get inside the minds and feelings of the explorers he's writing about. Critical praise for Fathers and Crows has been dramatic. A review in the Chicago Tribune said, if not the great American novel, it is likely to become one of the masterpieces of the century. Volman's fictional history doesn't simplify the motives and relations between the Indians and the European settlers.
I guess I'm a little bit concerned at the moment with the glorification of Native Americans. I think that Native Americans have a lot to teach me. I don't think that Native Americans are any better than Europeans or vice versa. It always kind of saddens and disappoints me to see how easy it is for most people to just say that one group is better than another. You know, maybe a generation ago, my friends might have said that Native Americans were savages and they had a lot to learn from Europeans. And now it's the other way around. And I just don't have too much patience with that. When I was writing Fathers and Crows, you know, I kept coming across all these horrific descriptions of things that the Indians would do to each other and equally horrific things that the Europeans would do to each other. And that's just how life is and how history is.
You have a wonderful sentence in this latest novel about history. And you write, for history is like a string that the cat has swallowed, drawing events and events from the poor creature's throat. One is surprised at how much must be disgorged. Is that how you think about writing and discovering history?
Yeah, that's really how it seems to me. You just have to go back and back and back way before your beginning if you want to understand the beginning. And oftentimes you have to go forward beyond the end. I don't think Hemingway would have approved of that method very much. But for history, I think it's really important. If you're going to bring the whole sweep of history alive, you have to make sure that you're grounded before and after.
In creating the kinds of characters that you do for Fathers and Crows, some of whom have real names that we would remember from history classes, and some of whom are people that you have created, how do you try to understand them, and how do you even understand their speech patterns, their fears, getting inside of their heads?
Well, Champlain is an easy example, and he, I think, is one of my particular successes in the book. His collected works runs about 6 volumes, and most of it is reports of discoveries, treatises on navigation, things like that. Nothing terribly personal. But you can read that stuff and reread it, and after a while you get some understanding of how he used language. And some understanding, possibly, of his preoccupations. Then, you know, you can crib and plagiarize a little bit from those, put a couple of those words in his mouth, get lists of phrases, and after a while, you can start duplicating those phrases, make up phrases similar to that, and you continue to read and reread the history of the time and see Champlain as others described him, and then you can start bringing him alive a little bit.
Sounds like a form of theater.
Yeah, in a way it is. It's also a lot, I think, like the spiritual exercises of the Jesuits.
How do you mean that?
Well, it's this interior building. You sit there and close your eyes and try to create your own versions of things so that they will be real to you. One of the big exercises in the spiritual exercises, for instance, is to imagine that you can see both heaven and hell. It doesn't say, all right, now look at heaven and you should be able to see a blue sky with white clouds, and look down into hell and you should be able to see devils with red tails and so on and so forth. You're supposed to bring your own visualizations to that. And that's more or less what I've done. I think, 10 other authors could have read Champlain's work and come up with 10 different Champlains. And yet if we all had some degree of faithfulness and integrity, there would be a certain amount of overlap there, or at least I like to think so.
My guest today on Fresh Air is William Volman, and he's just written a new book. It's the second in a series of novels that he's writing about the symbolic histories of North America. This latest book is called Fathers and Crows. Also, he has a book about traveling to Afghanistan in the early 80s to see the war there. That book has just been published, and it's called An Afghanistan Picture Show. We're going to take a short break. This is Fresh Air. My guest is writer William Volman. You worked as a computer programmer at a firm in Silicon Valley. When did you become a writer?
Well, I guess when I was 6 or 7, I knew that's what I wanted to do. I was always writing stories out by hand and drawing pictures. It actually isn't too different from what I do now, I guess.
What did you write about when you were 6 or 7?
Mainly science fiction things, people exploring alien suns, this and that. In some ways, that's not too different either.
Well, when did you begin to take yourself seriously as a writer? I guess it's hard to take a 6 or 7-year-old exactly seriously.
I guess when I decided to go to Afghanistan, I really wanted to do something that would help humanity somehow, and help the Afghans in particular. And I tried to think of various things that I could do. It seemed like probably the best thing would be to write a book about them and make people understand what their problems were.
Why did you have to go all the way to Afghanistan to help humanity?
Well, because I was a jerk. I didn't know any better. I could have very easily just tried to help myself or just go right outside my front door and find somebody who needed help. But at the time, there was the lure of the exotic experience. And, I'd just seen Lawrence of Arabia. I thought, wow, what a great thing. You know, maybe I can do something like that. And instead, I went over there and despite my best efforts, I was just kind of a trial and a burden to everybody because I didn't know how to do anything. And everyone was counting on me to be a big shot and get them all $1,000 and a dozen Stinger missiles and so on and so forth. And I couldn't do anything. When I got back, I couldn't even get on the radio and talk about it or do anything. And no one wanted to publish the book. It sat around for about 10 years, during which time I sort of tinkered with it and changed the narrative structure quite a bit.
Well, let me read a section from An Afghanistan Picture Show, and you write, "Once upon a time, there was a young man who wanted to be more than he really was. This made him unhappy. He decided to go to Afghanistan to take pictures of the bullets whizzing past his ears. Unfortunately, he had a stomach ache." That's you?
That's how it was. I did my best, and my best sure wasn't good enough.
Well, you're going back to Yugoslavia in just a couple of weeks, going back to another conflict. Do you know what you'll be looking for?
No, I really don't. It's an assignment for the LA Times, and they just want me to use whatever skills I have to get a human interest story. I'm pretty good at listening to people, and I don't mind a little discomfort, so I think I might be able to see some things that other journalists can't see. But I have to leave myself open, as always, and just see how things are when I'm over there. Maybe I'll go to Sarajevo, maybe I'll go some other place, I don't know yet.
Well, talking about listening to people and hanging out with people, you've written a lot about prostitutes, and I know that you've hung out with streetwalkers and drug dealers, Nazi skinheads, and others. Is there an art to doing that? A skill?
Well, I suppose. You could, my friend Ken Miller, who has worked with me with these people for a long time, takes pictures of them, which should be in more of my books than they are. He says the main trick is always give them something and always tell them what they want to hear. My own personal strategy is just always give them something and always listen to them.
You've chosen prostitutes as people to spend time with, to get to know. Why them?
Well, all my books are about love. In Fathers and Crows, for instance, the whole story is about how the Jesuits really loved the Indians. They wanted to save their souls with various foreseen and unforeseen consequences. The Afghanistan book is about how, I tried to love people and I wanted to do something to express that. Prostitution is a very interesting form of love, and the more I hang around with prostitutes, the more different kinds of love I see. It's kind of an inexhaustible theater and laboratory for me.
Let me ask you about an incident that happened in your childhood. And when you were 9 years old, you were told to keep an eye on your six-year-old sister, and she drowned.
Uh-huh. Yeah, that's correct.
What happened?
Well, we were at a pond, and the bottom of the pond had a sharp drop-off. My little sister couldn't swim, and she was waiting around, and I was doing something. I don't exactly remember what. I was probably dreaming with my head in the clouds, and I looked around, and she wasn't there. She had disappeared, and of course she was on the bottom of the pond at that time.
What kind of effect did that have on you?
Well, It didn't tend to make me feel terribly good about myself, as you can imagine. It made me want to try and make it up to somebody somehow, which is probably one reason why I went to Afghanistan, and one reason why I always would like to do things that could help people. It probably made me more honest in the end, too, because there was no way I could not be honest about it. For years and years, I was always thinking about it. And so it makes me not really afraid of being unpopular or having other people consider me wrong or feeling uncomfortable around me, because I kind of put myself through all that and I feel like I can say in my books whatever I need to say, and if other people disagree with it, that's okay with me.
What was your family's reaction to what happened?
They weren't too happy about it.
Did they blame you?
It's hard to say. I think, to some extent they did. I'm sure they blamed themselves as well.
Is it still an issue?
No, not really. Not for them and me. I mean, we still remember her birthday. We remember the day that she died, and we talk about it. But we go on with our lives.
You've said that you feel like an outsider. Do you think this incident contributes to that feeling?
I'm sure it did, yes.
You also call yourself William the Blind. You have
That's right.
You have eye problems, is that right?
That's right. I wear glasses. and I do have eye problems. I wanted some kind of persona to adopt for the Seven Dreams, and it seemed like William the Blind was an appropriate one. Here's this chronicler, this historian, who's trying to get everything's right, you know, who draws his own maps, and sometimes maybe the scale on the maps is not perfect. Sometimes maybe he gets a few details wrong. After all, he wasn't there in the 1600s or in 1000 AD, and he's doing his best, but as usual, his best probably isn't good enough since no one's is.
And since he's William the Blind.
Well, exactly.
Thank you, William Volman, for joining us on Fresh Air.
Oh, thank you.
William Volman's second in a 7-part series of symbolic histories of North America has just been published. It's called Fathers and Crows.